Live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. I am Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster. And on the other end of the inner tubes, we have Mr. Bill Bupert. What are you,
The silver-haired snow leopard is my wrestling name that has been deemed upon me by the fiends.
That's it. That's it. I slept 4 hours. I could
Excellent.
Get up. I got up to that point. Actually, I used a bunch of my brains. What little I have left today on lack of sleep, solving a problem that it turned out almost had us not on air. And it turned out that a cat had walked across my mixer and pressed a button on it. And there are about 400 buttons on this mixer. So I came up with a statement and you liked it and I'll say it. You said you should say that sometime. And I said, I'll say that in 3 minutes on the air. And it is. Experts aren't people who never have problems. Experts are people who can solve them quickly under pressure.
I love that. It really riffs off what Malcolm Gladwell would tell us. And when I was in the Legions, I used to tell my folks who worked for me, I would say, if you're operating at zero failure, you are an underperformer, to which I would respond, I am an overachiever.
You call the military the Legions. The only time I've ever heard that is in like American Legion or Legionnaire's disease. Is that a phrase people use commonly or is that just one you like?
No, not at all. It's one that I like because for a couple reasons.
We are Legion.
The Legions, because I do have an almost, much like my love of things English, I'm a reluctant Anglophile. I'm also a reluctant military historian because when you look at it as bureaucratized slaughter, it really begs the question of why would anybody want to examine that? But the Legions is sort of like an overarching umbrella term that describes time in uniform, sharing absurd circumstances under very arduous conditions, doing things that no human should do.
Yeah. And you were an officer in the Legion, I mean the Army.
Indeed I was. I was formally enlisted, and then I became what's called a Mustang, where I jumped from the enlisted ranks after my college tenure to become a commissioned officer.
Isn't Legion also a demon in the Christian Bible in the New Testament?
Indeed it is.
Yeah.
Because I am Legion and legend.
You are legend. You are a legend, and you people can learn more.
Only in my own mind.
People can learn more about your legend at your website, which is zerogov.com. I actually got a long email today that I haven't been able to even process about concepts of words that we use. And I may run this by you at the break, but it's not often I get a fan email that's over 2,000 words and under four paragraphs. But it's very eloquently written, and it's from a Duke of Connaught fellow, which I think is some kind of student or student teacher or professor, and University of Toronto Center for Medieval Studies and Pontifical Institute of Medieval Studies, and he lists his bona fides as medievalist, anarchist, parakeet lover, and fiend. I think that may require some examination by you and I at some point.
Gosh, I just love that, and that really riffs off of something that I've encountered of late. You know, T.E. Lawrence is one of my – I'm a fanboy of T.E. Lawrence in history, who led the rebellion of the Arabs against the Turks in World War I and later told Winston Churchill a better way to craft the Middle East than the mess that he left us. And he was a medievalist, and I've been listening to a book about C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis was a medievalist, and like Tolkien, they flirted – well, Tolkien was, but Lewis flirted with anarchism as a philosophical mean. And they both thought that the medievalist worldview was much more expansive than our worldview that we have now with our chronological hubris, where we think that just because we are where we are now, we're naturally better than those who came before us.
Yep. So we're going to do an hour at least on a topic of yours. And it's a very interesting topic to me. And it's a phrase that I want to catch on because it's a great phrase. And it really underlines the problem in society. And your phrase is a takeoff on the old hippie phrase of question authority. And your phrase, I may be paraphrasing, but it's question obedience, not authority. Is that the correct wording of it?
You know, it's you're almost there, Michael, but you got the drift of it. It's question obedience and authority, because naturally you'd have to do both in order to make the first one operative. But the reason why I say it's so important, not simply to question authority, is that it's real easy to question authority because you're sitting back on your couch, you're relaxing, and you're saying, that's a bad thing. Oh, by the way, I'm going to go vote now, and I'm going to go apply for my driver's license and all the rest of it. If you withdraw your obedience and you advance your refusal, that's the step to elimination. That's the step to doing what the fiends do best on your show, which is philosophically terraforming the planet one disobedient surf at a time.
Question obedience and authority with Bill Buppert, or with anyone you know, or with your loved ones, or with your pets. Yeah, I really like it because question authority. I mean, I remember seeing that as a bumper sticker and a T-shirt, you know, in the 70s when I was a kid. And it made sense to me because I was naturally inclined to question obedience. Question authority. But you can question authority all the way to the gulag. It doesn't do enough. I would almost say it does nothing, but that's not true. But it doesn't do enough, you know. And so tell me more about the concept, Bill.
Well, you know, I wrote an essay on this by that very name that was called Question Obedience and Authority, where I spoke to this very concept. And it struck, you know, Edward Abbey is a guy that I really enjoy reading. He died about 10 years ago. He was a self-proclaimed anarchist who wrote Desert Solitaire and a lot of other stuff. Not only was he a brilliant writer, brilliant thinker, but he was a real iconoclast in America, sort of like Robinson Jeffers, the anti-war poet from World War II. And one of the things that he said is that the tragedy of modern wars that the young men die fighting each other instead of their real enemies back home in the capitals. I mean, let that sink in. That says a lot. And I would also like to say, I'm not a pacifist.
Will you say it again, please?
I will. The tragedy of modern war is that the young men die fighting each other instead of their real enemies back home in the capitals.
Yeah, and that plays out in a lot of ways. I've put forth the theory on this show before that racism is something invented by the rich tyrants to keep the poor blacks and whites from getting together and hanging them.
Man, I agree with that. You know, even JFK spoke to this in sort of a way where he said that war will exist until that distant day when the conscientious objector enjoys the same reputation and prestige that the warrior does today.
Yep. And we're not anti-wealth. We're not anti-capitalism. We love capitalism, but it's often conflated with corporatism, which is basically fascism. It's the government picking winners and losers, and it's the government heavily tariffing everything, even within national borders, to the point where, you don't really own your company, even if you own it.
That's a great distinction, Michael. And I recently read a book about Fred Harvey and the Appetite for America, where he was talking about, where the book demonstrated how he revolutionized fine dining and eating in America in a private capitalist fashion. But in 1886, one of my former favorite presidents in that, whole gallery of numbskulls was Grover Cleveland. But then I discover that Grover Cleveland was probably one of the primary facilitators of the Interstate Commerce Commission in the 1880s and the imposition thereof. And I thought, well, in 1942, you had the Supreme Court hearing where they said that even if you conduct interstate commerce, it doesn't leave the boundaries of your farm. You're in interstate commerce.
Yeah. And
where Cleveland made that illegal.
What was the first test case for that? Do you remember?
I do not.
It was something
but it was
really
a railroad
strange.
Case in the 1880s that provided the germination for for the Interstate Commerce Commission. And what we can do is we can make sure that gets in the show notes for this particular episode.
Yeah, and isn't that one of the things that Nancy Pelosi said gave her the right to pass Obamacare?
Well, it certainly is, along with the taxing authority that was given to the national government in 1791 under the Constitution.
Yep.
Yep. I mean, you know, one of the things that people don't pay attention to with the Constitution, among all the things that are wrong with it, is that it took the AOC, the Articles of Confederation, put it in the dustbin of history, and said one of the primary reasons, and the Federalists talk about this, one of the primary reasons we want a national state and a gun in the hands of the national state is so that we can reach over state borders and tax individuals.
That's so square.
Indeed it is, but 3 years after the ratification of the Constitution, you saw George Washington at the head of an army going after tax evaders.
I really want that to spread, that tyrants and governments in general are square. You know, that's the best thing you can do to make somebody really understand it, make the youngsters understand it. I don't even know if the youngsters say square anymore, and calling them youngsters is certainly making me sound square, but... I saw Bill O'Reilly on TV the other day, who is
he's disgusting.
A square among disgusting squares, I would say. I mean, he's even, you know, he's one of these, you gotta love the office of the president, even if he writes these corrupt hagiographies of tyrants like Lincoln, and I don't know, he has a whole slew of them, but
and his editors are horrible too. He should hire me to do his military consultation on his books, because he uses words like barrack instead of barracks and describes the bar ammunition as 3 inches long. Come on, this isn't naval gunfire. This is a small arm.
And this is a guy who loves to – he's an ex-school teacher, a former school teacher who loves to be pedantic and erudite to the point of annoyance. At the end of each show on TV, he says, "And don't be erudite. And if you don't know what it is, look it up." You know, he likes to use 50-cent words and make himself sound smart. But yeah, his books are riddled with errors.
Awful. And like Michael Savage, he's a cop lover of the highest water.
Yeah. But he was talking the other day about how he loves the band Green Day. And I was like, that's the death of the band Green Day right there, man. He just killed it. I'll bet their record sales will go down. All right, we'll be back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
My fellow sheep. Election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. When I needed a robust and secure home business computer network for my radio show, I hired QPG.us. QPG.us did a great job with a complex custom setup and did it remotely over the internet. Whether you have one computer or 1,000, QPG.us can set up your small business network, no matter where in the world you live, fast and at a reasonable price. QPG.us is a liberty-loving company that can also help you with networking, domain name registration, DNS, email, SSL, VPNs, and more. That's QPG.us.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not watching you. And you know, if you're really important, you've probably got your own drone, so it probably doesn't matter what you do. Might not be armed. Who knows? Do you know anything about that, Bill?
I do not.
Okay. So we're talking, we're going to get back to this great bumper sticker of Bill's. It's not a bumper sticker yet, but it should be a bumper sticker. Question obedience and authority, which I really like. We did a little side trip that is worth going back to, is the difference between Edward Abbey and Edward Albee. I got them mixed up. You were talking about Edward Abbey, who is the monkey wrencher naturalist. He's kind of like, who wrote Walden Pond?
That Thoreau.
He's kind of like Thoreau with a gun and some
with
and
an
some,
edge. Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah. Thoreau with an edge. I think that's a good description.
Thoreau with some guns and weed. Whereas Edward Albee is a playwright who wrote Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and rewrote the book for the unsuccessful musical Breakfast at Tiffany's, which later became a successful movie.
Which is a fabulous movie in my mind.
Yeah, it's a weird...
Because I love the characters and I'm a big fan of Cary Grant in the old movies.
Yep, and that was from a novel or a novella by Truman Capote, who's a whole nother ball of interesting. But did you see the biopic on Truman Capote?
I did not. Oh, wait. Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I was underwhelmed.
And then the guy who played him in it killed himself a few years later.
Heroin? Is that what it was?
Heroin, I think you'd have to say if it was anyone who ever played Truman Capote. Heroin. Okay. He killed himself with heroin. And I know he's American, but it's just how I picture him.
But a heroine would be a woman.
Yeah, there you go. So, yes, Truman Capote was the queen of Hemingway-style tough American literature. How's that?
I like it.
Yeah? Yeah? Okay. He was the American Southern... queen of Hemingway style brutalist novel writing. All right, so
certainly
Edward Abbey, Abbey. I'm gonna talk a little bit about this guy. He was born in 1920. Wow, wait, could this be right? From 18? Oh, okay. There was a mistake in this. Born in 1927, died in 1989. An American author and essayist noted for his advocacy of environmental issues, criticism of public land policies, and his anarchist political views. He's best known for the novel The Monkey Wrench Gang, which has been cited as an inspiration for radical environmentalist groups.
Like Earth First.
Yeah, I don't even want to... I was going to say, what do you think about them? But I know that you get a knock at your door if you say you like them. But okay, what do you think of them?
Well, the only thing that I don't like about Earth First is the same thing that I don't like about the Enviruses to begin with. They tend to be watermelons. They tend to be green on the outside and red on the inside. Yeah. It seems to be the latest vessel and vehicle in which communists, socialists, and other really nasty collectivists can hide and still trumpet how they want to reform society.
Which is a point I like to bring up is a lot of people, and conservatives seem to be really guilty of this, end up hating even good things just because some lefties like the things. Like, I have seen conservatives who hate people who ride bicycles or hate bicycles because a lot of lefties ride bicycles. A lot of conservatives hate environmentalism because, they're basically like, yeah, let's just paint the earth with mercury just because the lefties love the earth. And it's counterproductive, man.
I think you're right, Michael, but let's look at it this way, too. Recycling only makes economic sense if you're paid to do it. And when you look at Overstock.com, which is a rival to Amazon as far as size, and Amazon does the same thing, they take recycling to the most rational level it can be.
Yeah.
There's plenty of used goods on both those or stuff that other companies are no longer selling that they liquidated and had a liquidator like Overstock.com. I mean, if you want to talk about environmentalism that's responsible, that's what Overstock.com is.
Yep, and refurbished items too, which Amazon sells a lot. I ordered a really kick butt piece of electronic kit on Amazon the other day that's refurbished, and it's a compressor that costs about $550 new, and I bought it refurbished with a 1-year guarantee on Amazon for $178.
See, how can you beat that?
I know. We'll be back with more on Edward Abbey and question authority and obedience with Bill Buepert from ZeroGov.com. Worms.
listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I'm talking to Bill Buford from ZeroGov.com, which is a fascinating web presence that y'all should check out. That's ZeroGov.com. Now, Bill Buford, we were talking about Edward Abbey, correct?
We are, indeed. And I hope your audience, those of your audience who are readers, get Desert Solitaire, The Monkey Wrench Gang. There's a sequel to The Monkey Wrench Gang, which is called Hey Duke's Revenge. Hey Duke is a big character in both of those books. A lot of fun. Great writer, great messages. As a budding novelist myself, writing fiction for nonfiction writers is bloody hard, and he can do both really well.
Yeah, and he was definitely an influence on Claire Wolfe, who is a writer that we like a lot.
Who's wonderful.
And I believe Claire Wolfe was an influence on Boston Tea Party. I know he likes her writing, and I think he said at one point that she was one of the reasons he started writing. I don't want to say that for sure, because he tends to listen and correct me when I put words in his mouth. So,
and both are an influence on me.
There you go. We could definitely definitively and definitely say that. I would say are all three an influence on you?
Absolutely, yes. And Rothbard, of course, he's the apex predator for my intellect. These guys are in the tree.
So how did Edward Abbey live – and live your saying, and well, he didn't live your saying, but he influenced you to come up with the saying, question authority and obedience.
He did, because since I can't really quote from his books, I can quote from some of the things that he said. But one of the things that I've always said is that Buford's corollary to Acton's axiom of power corrupting is that power attracts the corruptible. And absolute power attracts even worse. Now, Abbey preceded me by saying that power is always dangerous. Power attracts the worst and corrupts the best. In other words, what is democracy? Democracy is being afraid of a few bad people, and because of that, you put the worst people in society in charge of every aspect of your being to protect you from those few bad people. You know, Abbey was an anarchist of both the old and the new school, as you and I would recognize it, because he had a severe skepticism and distrust of government across the board. For instance, he went on to say, our neoconservatives are neither new nor conservatives, but old as Babylon and evil as hell. I mean, he just said a whole lot of great stuff, because he would say, for instance, the anarchism is founded on the observation that since few men are wise enough to rule themselves, even fewer are wise enough to rule others. And you and I both know from looking at current Western results, those people who are rulers and in charge of the rest of us are proving Abbey to be correct. I mean, what Abbey's basic philosophy was that wilderness is a gift given to you by whoever who you think the creator is, whether you're an agnostic, a deist, a Catholic, a Baptist, Islam, whatever the case may be, that wilderness is to be protected, but not protected through government edicts of environmentalism, but through your own efforts to preserve and conserve and use it in a responsible way.
Yep. And Edward Abbey had an interesting pedigree, an interesting history, some interesting bona fides, as I like saying. You don't know that use of that phrase, do you, like that?
We pronounce it bona fides in the use that I'm used to.
Yeah, so. It's really old fashioned, but my mispronouncing of it is from the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
A wonderful movie. Whoever in your audience hasn't seen it should see it. Just yeah, for the music.
It's a great movie. So Edward Abbey was in. Let's see. He was. Was he actually in the army or did he draft dodge?
No, I think he wasn't.
Yeah, he was in the army.
He hated it.
He worked for the U.S. Park Service, the National Park Service.
Yep, as a fire watch guy, which is one of my dream jobs, where you're out on top of a tower looking for lightning strikes for embryonic fires in these vast nature preserves for 3 months at a time.
Yep, and he was a freight train hopper. And during his trip, he fell in love with the desert country of the Four Corners region. And we are actually on the radio right now in the Four Corners region. So that's pretty
indeed
cool.
Indeed, we are. I am broadcasting from an above ground window bunker in northern Mexico or southern Arizona, whatever your perspective is. And you are broadcasting from elsewhere.
Yeah.
Due north of me.
Yep. I think... Yeah, there's probably some interesting math of the name of the angle of where you and I and the Four Corners region would meet.
As long as it's east of the 100th meridian, that's all we need. West of the 100th meridian, that's all we need.
You know, the actual location of the Four Corners Monument is not geographically where it really should be. There was some political haranguing of some entity or some other entity wanted it as a tourist attraction, and they put it, I don't know, it's a few miles wrong one way and a mile wrong the other way or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, governments. Governments! I wonder if the real one is like in somebody's backyard and they have a sundial there and charge people a quarter to look at it.
How do you know the government is lying? Their mandibles are moving.
Yeah. Although I have a theory that we could talk about later, which is just because the government says it's true doesn't mean it isn't, because I see a lot of people just taking the total conspiracy tack on anything to the point of their own detriment. I believe the government wants us dead or in a cage or running on a treadmill 23 hours a day and giving all our labor to them. I believe they are incredibly inefficient and can't do things nearly as well as the free market, even though they have all the money in the world and all the stolen money and inflating the dollar 95%. Or, you know, 19 out of 20 times in the last 100 years. Yeah. But I don't automatically discount everything that comes out of their mouths and mandibles and press releases. And we kind of got into it the other day a little bit. I got into it with you for doing something that would have been par for the course to the point of being ordinary and boring on most talk radio that I took exception with. And it was you. I think we can address this really quickly. Is that okay? Yeah.
All right. Sure.
I'm
go ahead.
Do it anyway. You said something in passing the other night on this show as a co-host, something to the effect of polio was not eradicated by the government. They just renamed it meningitis. Was that what you said?
Now, that's accurate. And here's how I misspoke, if that's all I said. Meningitis was among the many things they would reflag those symptomatic bundles as.
Yeah. And so, meningitis is a symptom.
And I stand by that.
Meningitis is a symptom, not a disease. I'm not taking you to task on the air. What I'm doing is I'm pointing out how our show is different from other shows because, there's some people in the liberty movement right now doing some people that have interviewed me and probably you who are doing long videos actually saying things as ridiculous as almost saying that Ebola doesn't exist. I mean, that is just nutbaggery. Would you agree?
And I agree with that, as I agree that the birther thing, a lot of the 911 stuff, the chemtrail stuff, I do not dip my toe into the conspiracist fever swamp, nor do I take lap swims in it like some of my colleagues do, because I think that there's enough fact and speculation out there that I'm confined to just trying to understand the world as it is and not trying to understand the world as it ain't.
Yeah, there's enough that governments not only admit they do, but put in their mission statements and on their websites that I could talk about 24 hours a day for 10 lifetimes that is horrible things that all governments do without even coming near things that require blurry pictures with red arrows added to try to act as evidence.
Absolutely. I mean, I saw a recent documentary that, and I'll put it in the show notes once I remember what it is. My adult memory can't come up with it right now, where the Air Force actually encouraged some observers outside of their base to assume that their practice of test flying stealth aircraft were UFOs to sort of double blind and make them go in the other direction so they could continue with their experiments.
Oh, I think that the government loves UFO conspiracists and JFK conspiracists.
I think
because
so too.
Because whether or not there's any truth to the theories of those people, they keep people busy looking at the wrong things. Like,
it's misdirection.
You know, if the CIA killed JFK, which is entirely possible, but I don't have any proof of it or any evidence even of it. If that's true, most of the people who believe that still vote and still love the government and still fund the CIA by all of their actions. You know?
And you make such a great point, because if they spend a disproportionate amount of time, whether it's the birthers, the truthers, the 911 folks, whatever the case may be, chemtrails, whatever that is, if they do still vote, that really puts the lie to their efforts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more concerned with facts, like police in New Mexico, speaking of the Four Corners region, police increasingly pulling people over at a random traffic stop, assuming they have drugs, bringing a drug dog can't find any, and the person was squirming in their seat because they were sitting there for an hour and a half while they waited for the drug dog. So they take him to a hospital and have a doctor violate his Hippocratic Oath by doing a painful rectal search on the person and violating all their rights for this insane war on drugs, and then sending the person a bill for it.
Oh my gosh!
That's fact.
It is. It makes my head explode. Do you know that those cockroaches who maim that baby in the crib by putting a flashbang in it during a raid? All charges have been dismissed against them.
I'm surprised.
The same with the 7-year-old who was banged out by the cockroach gang.
I'm surprised they didn't get a medal for it, honestly.
Well, maybe they did.
I mean, that's actually happened where police have raided the wrong house for drugs, which, you know, it's supposedly legal for them to raid a house for drugs if they have a tip, and the tip can be as flimsy as, you know, they bust somebody else for drugs and the guy, they tell him, you know, make a deal, give us someone bigger, and they just give the name of a neighbor they don't like who probably doesn't even do drugs.
You know, the phrase color of law means acting without legitimate authority, and I would suggest to everybody who is in the listening audience that color of law is everything the government does now that is malum prohibitum.
Yep, malum prohibitum, meaning against the law just because they say it, not because it should be. We'll be back with Bill Buepert from ZeroGov.com on the Freedom Fiends.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com. Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza. Talking to Bill Biepert from ZeroGov.com. And what do you want to talk about, Bill? More about?
I want to talk about obedience and authority.
Yeah, yeah.
And those in your audience, you know, film's a great way to translate or transmit some of these liberty messages that you and I are so fond of. Michael Collins stars Liam Neeson, an anti-gun liberal collectivist Hollywood type of the highest water. But nonetheless, he does a great turn as Michael Collins. Michael Collins does a terrific speech that you can find on YouTube where he talks, and I paraphrase, they can have our bodies. They can send us to the Marne. At the time, that's World War I. It's a slaughterhouse in World War I that the British were sending people to. He's fomenting the Irish Rebellion after the failure in 1916. And he basically says something that Gandhi riffed on, which is he says, you know, you can take our body, you could put us in chains, you can do everything like that, but you can't take away our most valuable weapon, which is our refusal, which is why somebody asked me the other day, Bill, what do we do? And I said, well, it comes down to this. It's you don't vote, you personally secede from the government in every way you can, and you advance your refusal, and you make your obedience number one as far as your job priorities.
Which brings us to the really, really hilarious and apt meme that was going around the internet after the Scots barely failed to secede by a vote. It was a picture from Braveheart, and the caption was, you could take our country if it's ratified by 4% in a full democratic election.
I love that.
You haven't seen
that one?
It's
so funny.
It's awesome. I love it. Yep.
The Scots became English poodles in 1746 at the Battle of Culloden.
You know, a lot of peoples that used to have a lot of fight in them, and I'll probably get people wanting to lynch me from all of these peoples. But a lot of the peoples that were the most brave warriors back in the day have been poodled out to the point where, you know, they killed off. I mean, you know, the Mormons. Gosh, I could just go on. There's
no, you're right. The Celts, who I think are genetically anti-authoritarian. Yeah. Yet you look at England, you look at France, and you look at Scotland, and you look at Ireland, and they're all socialist collectivist hellholes.
Native Americans and Mormons come to mind in America too. You know,
agreed.
The federal
Aboriginal
government
Americans
battled them. You know, murdered the ones that were the feistiest, and then enslaved the rest with soft slavery to the point where, you know, they bent their rules to the white man, to the Fed man. To the Fed man's ways.
You know, there is a redemption in the third act, as it were, with this whole conversation you're having, though, Michael, and that's this. Remember that even the most ardent collectivists, they cut corners when it comes to compliance. They'll buy stuff, for instance, at the communist and socialist book fairs and job fairs and virus marches and stuff like that. They use plastic containers that are made by Nalgene. They use Vistaprint to make all their literature. They use capitalist means to do this because they are the most effective means to do it. Now, they don't quite understand why it's so effective, but they all cut corners. That's why the black market and the underground economy and the gray economy were vital to the USSR to have the 80-year history it did. Otherwise, it would have fallen apart in the first 5 years.
Well,
it's not for underground markets, they don't succeed.
There's another meme going around the face beefs that's pretty funny. It's from benswan.com, BENSWANN.com. It's a good website from a good guy. It's the Seattle's Freedom Socialist Party is listing a job opening, and this is an organization that's demanding a $20 an hour minimum wage, and they're offering a $13 per hour job.
I love it, and
that's the joke, and it's true. But the thing that no one's pointing out, I looked at this closer, and the job description is like copywriting, editing, web design, light custodial. So basically, like, they want someone who's skilled with computers to also sweep the floor. Man, socialism
and clean the vomit in the restroom.
Socialism is horrible.
It's horrible.
It's horrible. Yeah, man. Yep. So there. That's what your 4 years of liberal arts college learning graphic arts and computer design gets you, I guess, in the socialist paradise of Seattle is, yeah, you can get a job doing that, but you got to clean up the vomit in the bathrooms, too. And we do like saying redemption in the third act, and we like having one not only at the end of the show, but at the end of each hour, because we like ours to be self-contained. And that is your Liberty Media Radio Teaching Hospital tip for the day. Always try to wrap it up, B. Wrap it up in neat little packages, even if it's all sloppy in the middle, because people remember the beginning and the end. Worms.
Annelids.
People remember your entrances and your exits. That's what Keith Moon said.
Hey, there's some Squiskar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. And I am talking to Bill Bupert from ZeroGov.com, a retired army officer and medievalist. and we're taking, well, we don't take calls, but we took a call. Caller, what is your name, sir?
Hey, Michael, this is Ben Stone.
Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, who's actually not a caller. Ben is one of our regular co-hosts, and he could speak up a tiny, tiny bit.
Okay.
How you doing, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker from badquaker.com?
I'm doing really well. We're deep in the swamps of Louisiana right now.
Yeah. you actually were talking to me on the phone the other day, and wasn't there a gator watching you?
Yeah, they're here in abundance. This is almost getting late in the season for them, but it's still warm enough that they're out and about.
All right, so I received an email from a guy named Lawrence from Canada. I'm not going to say what university he works at because he didn't say if we could read this or not. But he listed his job position as medievalist, anarchist, parakeet lover, and fiend. And this letter basically says Ben Stone is a fool, and I'm going to read it, and Ben Stone is going to argue with it, and Bill's going to argue with it, or agree with it. I don't know. I think that he is splitting hairs of nomenclature, because, Ben, what did you say anarchy meant, the actual meaning of the word, the historic meaning of the word?
Well, you know, we're driving into ancient Greek and picking it apart. And among biblical scholars, you can literally spend hours on a single word picking apart to try to find out what the early biblical writers were talking about when they said, you know, one Greek word as opposed to a different Greek word. So a bit of this is just asking for an argument anytime you ask someone to define a Greek word. But I look at it as it's not anti-archy. So it's not against anything. It's more like, almost like animation. It's like self-ruled or self-ordered. Archy being from, similar to the word, like a hierarchy. It doesn't necessarily mean there's a king, but it means that there is a system of order there that is ranking from lower to higher, higher to lower. So I look at it as that. It's self-ordered, not so much a ruler or a king or whatever, but it could be a dictator as well or a ruler. The idea is that it's self-ordered, not ordered by someone else, some great king or whatever.
Okay. I'd like to weigh in on this, if I may.
Okay. I do want to read his email, though, before we get too far ahead of ourselves.
I don't want to because it will belabor the audience, and I don't think that...
Well, let me
You know,
let me read ahead. A couple bits here real quick. He says that he loves our show. He loves the perfectionism with audio quality. He's going to get the microphone we recommend. But we need to know what the word anarchy means because we use it and we need to know what it means. And he says that, let's see. Doing a bit of digging for Ben Stone and Jeffrey Tucker or others who inject their own spin and ignorance. You should know, since you reach a decent sized audience, its meaning will propagate. Hail the fiends. I can't even tell if this is a fan letter or if this is someone messing with us. But he goes on to say anarchy derives from the Greek word archon, A-R-C-H-O-N. I believe I'm saying that wrong. Plus the prefix A. Archon means ruler. That's it. You may want to go further and say dictator, which is defensible and very powerful when you want to dig the knife deeper into your opponent and make room for the brain word, brain worm. The prefix A/N in Greek means no or not. It signifies negation. Put it together for yourself. Anarchon means no ruler or no dictator. Anarchy means no ruler. And I do want to say what else he said about Ben Stone. He says, guys like Jeffrey Tucker and Ben Stone are good at what they do, but they will also talk out their butt, making that radio friendly, and not admit it because their vanity trips them up. Get the knowledge straight from a reliable source, not a lightweight. This guy is a reliable source, according to him, not a lightweight. What say you, fellows? Bill, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I want to say that Ben is an intellectual brother to me and that I've learned a lot from him, so I don't consider him to be the lightweight that the letter writer does. But I really appreciate what this letter writer is trying to do because what he wants to do is he wants to make sure that we practice specificity in our language. But here's my problem. You can have a world with rules, but you don't want rulers. That's why I am flagged as an anarchist. But I hate the term anarchist now. And why do you think we have anarcho-capitalist, anarcho-communist, anarcho-socialist? It's because everybody's confused, which is why, and here I'm pimping myself, and I think Ben agrees with this, I am an abolitionist. I am opposed to all forms of human slavery and ownership of other human beings. And to me, that really wipes away all the disagreement and confusion about the notion that we have of a world that's filled with rules but doesn't have rulers.
Yeah, I have a problem with this guy's letter is that it's long, eloquent, and demanding perfection, but at no place does he quote what Ben said wrong. And that leaves us in our over 50 addled brains to try to remember what Ben said wrong. So,
or not bother remembering.
I would say when someone is making an intellectual appeal to an appeal to intellect and demanding action, like much of this letter actually does. I mean, he's basically demanding we read this, which is not why we're reading it. I'm reading it because he signed his because his sick line says medievalist anarchist parakeet lover and fiend, which just it tickles me. You know, he really didn't. If this were a legal paper, if this were a pleading in court, it would be thrown out even in a libertarian paradise because he doesn't fully make his argument. He says Ben did something wrong. Here's the right thing, but he doesn't say what Ben and Jeffrey Tucker did wrong.
Another thing to keep in mind in this is that, you know, we have literally, between us, we have done hundreds and hundreds of these shows, whether on my podcast or here on the Freedom Fiends radio show. And I think, if I recall, the conversation he's talking about is probably about 2 years old.
Yeah.
And was when Nima and was on the show, and there was a sort of a three-way discussion, if I recall. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah. Today's episode is episode 520 of the Freedom Fiends, and that's also not counting the 80 or so episodes of Anarchy Gumbo. It's not counting the – how many episodes does your show have, Ben?
Oh, we're up around 400.
Yeah, so this guy is basically asking – he is taking us to task for something that was said, probably not in passing. It was probably a whole segment, but in somewhere in about 2,000 hours of media.
And here's another thing too, and this sort of grates on me a bit, and I know that it bothers Bill, but the English language as used in the United States is a very fluid and flexible language, and the meanings of major words get shifted constantly. So the meaning of something in common language in, you know, if you would have said, well, that's a gay fellow. If you said that to someone in 1890, it would mean something totally different than that.
My dad is 93 and still uses gay, the word gay, in the old sense. And like, I think in the past 10 years, he may have realized it makes people giggle when he says, I'm feeling gay today. But yeah, it's not even back to the 1800s. I mean, it's back to, you know, 1930, 1940, 1950.
Yeah. Now, I would like to live in a world where words had a set defined meaning and they never change.
I wouldn't. Here's what I say to this fellow. Okay, finish. I'm sorry, Ben. Go ahead. Finish, please.
Well, I was just going to say that the English language is just not like that in the United States today.
Language is fluid, and people who try to nail it down with demands, especially government demands, are idiots. Trying to say, we must make English the natural language of America. First of all, that's England's language. Why are people so persnickety about that being the language here? But those people, and a lot of them call themselves small government Republicans. They're the people that say they want to drown government in a bathtub. Basically, they're talking like anarchists when they say things like that. And I say that doesn't go not far enough, as they say on Futurama. And Davy Barker said it better recently, to the point where it was retweeted by Grover Norquist, who invented the phrase, I want government so small I can drown in a bathtub. Davy Barker said, I want government so small that it's theorized about by particle physicists. But one of my favorite quotes is from Bill Bryson, who's a travel writer and essayist who is really right on about a lot of things. And he said, the difference between a language and a dialect, he said, a language is a dialect with an army. And that basically means, you know, it's hard to say what is a language and what is a dialect, but once you have government guns immorally backing a dialect, it becomes an official language. And people who don't want language to flow and evolve are people who believe – I mean, it's hard – it's amazing to me to say – for someone to say they're an anarchist like this fellow does and then say, you must use the old meaning of the word anarchy, because that's basically saying, I don't allow the market to change something.
I may have caused this argument. I'm not saying this is absolutely definitive and positive, and I'm positive about this. I'm not sure. But recently, someone was attempting to take me to task on some minor point of English, and they quoted a gentleman from the University of Toronto, and it may have been the same person that we're talking about. And there were a lot of titles involved in why I should respect what this person said. And I essentially said, look, I don't care what somebody in some ivy covered halls is saying in some foreign country. It doesn't matter to me. This is my language and this is how I use it. And so I think maybe that word may have gotten back to him.
If you said that, yeah, because this guy is literally in an ivy-covered hall in a foreign country. One more thing before we pitch it to Bill here. Another thing that amuses me is anarcho-syndicalists or anarcho-communists or anarcho-socialists saying that anarcho-capitalists cannot use the word anarchist and that they're not anarchists. Those people who don't believe in property are saying they have intellectual property on the term anarchist. That is laughable. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends with Bill Buebert's response. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Freedom Fiends, this is Michael Dean talking with Bill Buebert from ZeroGov.com and Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker from BadQuaker.com. And we're having a little fun with a fan letter that we got chiding us for, and we're not totally making fun. We're not making fun of this guy. Like, he's silly. He's a parakeet lover. My wife is a parakeet lover, and we like that he's a medievalist, an anarchist, and a fiend, and that he works in an ivory tower. That's all cool. We need more fiends working in the ivory towers with their parakeets. But he's just asking for specificity. That's the only thing. I mean, that's a noble thing, wouldn't you say, Bill?
I would say absolutely so. And I'm a big fan of parakeets. I refer to Hollywood actors as bipedal budgies. So
and Derek, you know, it fits together. Derek, one of our co-hosts, Derek J, is the warrant canary, which is kind of close to a parakeet.
So what I was saying is that in defense of Ben and in defense of the Fiends is that when you have a dash between the word anarcho and put what you want into it, syndicalist, socialist, communist, that really does tell you that linguistically there's some severe problems with employing that as a way to gain consensus, which is why, here I am pipping myself again, I've gone to the term abolitionist, which is very clear-cut and very, I think, cleanly apprised of what its meaning is, which is that the ownership of other human beings is wrong in every fashion, whether it's political, whether it's chattel, whether it's taxation, whether it's regulatory. If they don't have your consent, you shouldn't be able to saddle them with anything. It's the same with the word should. You should never use anything but the word I in front of the word should.
Yeah, and I like to call myself a no-government man, which is a fun term.
But I like that. I'm not anti-government. You know, it's like being anti-nature. Yeah. I'm not anti-nature or anti-environmentalist. I want nothing to do with them. You know, I love nature, but I want nothing to do with the enviruses as they have, you know, envisioned themselves today. And I want nothing to do with people who want to make me their property, which is, for instance, what voting does and what government does.
And speaking of people who love nature, you know who invented the term no government man and called himself that? It was Henry David Thoreau.
Oh, how interesting. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's great. Who wrote the book Walden, his reflections.
Even though you don't read.
I'm familiar with it. I was beat with a copy of Walden as a kid in school. And
Can you believe they had people read that in school, though, Michael?
They used to.
What a revolutionary act that is.
In high school, I read that book. I read 1984. I read Animal Farm. These books were assigned. I think those books would be banned in public school now because they might show you the cracks behind the curtain. But yeah, and there's, you know, with the specificity, you know, it's kind of comes down to like wrapping someone's knuckles sometimes with a copy of Strunk and White. But I still like the term anarchist, even though it doesn't fit. And, you know, it sounds like a crazy person who blows things up, and I'm not that. And it sounds like a person who breaks windows, and I'm not that. To a lot of people, that's the picture they have from that phrase. The only reason I will still use that phrase is because it irks the heck out of lefty ANCOMs. And I love irking the heck out of lefty ANCOMs, so I still use it. Because those people who don't believe in property, and I do believe in property, but those people who don't believe in property think they have a copyright on the term anarchist. They think they own it. So I like to use it just to irk them.
Sure, and I'll use it, but I just, being a bug for specificity as I am in my use of the language and my love of the Oxford English Dictionary, I will use the term abolitionist more so than anarchist now.
So take us home on this, Bill. Let's have what's your ruling, sir, in this people's court here in the libertarian paradise? What's your ruling on this guy? And I'll have the same question from Ben, and then we'll move back on to your original topic of question obedience and authority.
You know what? If he wanted to call me a purple-bellied fjord budgie, because that's the way he labeled what it is that I represent as being against the ownership of other human beings, I would gladly accept that if he understood exactly what I was saying. So this letter, I'm glad that somebody took the time to write you. I'm glad that somebody took the time to say, you know what, we need to practice specificity about anarchy, especially when he signs in his tagline that he is a believer in not using other people as property. So I guess it's sort of a tempest in a teapot to me, Michael, and we're making more out of it than it has to be. But I do think that the term anarchist may be so compromised in the present discussion environment that we may have to employ another one.
And the guy just wrote me back and said, we can, in fact, give his whole name and read anything we want in this. He signs it, sincerely, Lawrence M. Ludlow, Lawrence M. Ludlow, Masters of Arts, Duke of Connaught Fellowship, University of Toronto, Center for Medieval Studies and Pontifical Institute of Medieval Studies, medievalist, anarchist, parakeet lover, and fiend. I love that. That wouldn't even fit on a business card. All right, we'll be back with more. Tilting against the windmills of the state, but knocking them over with our words on The Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Michael Dean, the freedom parakeet, the freedom hawk. I'm not a hawk. I don't love war. I try to avoid it. There's really no point for it. And when you go to war, you are just fighting for billionaires who want to turn your blood into money. And that's what they do. Would you say that's true, Bill, as someone who was a, you love when I say this, an officer in the U.S. military?
Yeah, thanks for that. I appreciate it. No, I'd say that that's not entirely correct. I'd say not only does it serve the billionaires, but it serves the military contractors, it serves the government, it serves the entire apparatus that wishes to rule over other human beings. Because when we look at World War I with the jump in the debt, when you look at World War II, what happens is war is truly the health of the state, and it does jumpstart the ability of the government not only to maintain its power, but to expand its power. When you look at World War I, for instance, you had a league that Woodrow Wilson put together where he got anarchists, conscientious objectors, people who objected to the war, anti-war activists, and all of those guys. He fined them, jailed them, and sometimes killed them.
Yep, and the phrase question authority was popularized in the 60s by Timothy Leary. And it was considered a horrible statement to a lot of people. Don't question authority. And, you know, a lot of people who loved the state loved Richard Nixon. Even if they didn't love Richard Nixon, they were, you gotta love the office of the president. And, you know, questioning authority in the 60s basically meant, I don't want to go die in some rice paddy for who knows what purpose. It made sense to question authority. And interesting, let me read this little article here on Wikipedia about the phrase question authority. It is intended to encourage people to avoid fallacious appeals to authority. And appeals to appeal from authority or appeal to authority is a logical fallacy. The term question authority has always symbolized the necessity of paying attention to the rules and regulations as promulgated. What's that word? Promulgated. Pummeled into
promulgated.
Pummeled by a government into its citizenry. However, psychologists have criticized Leary's method of questioning authority and have argued that it resulted in widespread dysfunctionality. In their book, Question Authority, Think for Yourself, psychologists Beverly Potter and Mark Estron alleged that the practice of Leary's question authority philosophy enhances a person's self-interest and greatly weakens the ability to cooperate with others. Psychiatrist Richard Coles also described the practice of Leary's question authority philosophy as dangerous and destructive behavior. What say you, either of you?
I am a proud oppositional defiance disorder patient.
Yeah, me too.
And I think that I'm really opposed to ideas that are so good that they have to be mandatory. And I think that when we look at this entire milieu that we're surrounded by people who think that stepping out of line and going in the opposite direction is not the right thing to do because they prize conformity above all else. And conformity, when it's matched to government and rulers, always means that you're going to be assigned to a society that doesn't prize individuality. I mean, those people who vote, those people who rah-rah the wars that are fought overseas, all of them are enemies of individuality first and foremost.
You know, if you look at animals, and I tend to look at animals a lot when I want to learn about humans because essentially that's what humans are. But when you look at animals, you see animals that have a tendency to be herding animals. And those animals tend to not be very bright.
Herding. And then, to be clear, he said herding, like act in a herd, not hurting.
Right, correct. Yes. They tend to herd. And then you have other animals that tend to be higher in the intelligence level that either act independently or act in small packs. And
or are predators and meat eaters.
Yeah, they tend to be the higher level intelligence things because actually the consumption of fat is one of the things that it's thought that in the evolutionary process actually allowed humans to gain an advantage.
A big, juicy brain?
Yeah. It was the early consumption of fat. And so
I consume a lot of fat, which is part of the reason I have a really big, juicy brain.
Well, may I also emphasize that predators and meat eaters require sophisticated problem-solving sets that most herbivores do not because of the ample availability of foodstuffs for herbivores that don't have to be chased, whereby predators and carnivores have to be problem solvers by their nature.
Hey, Ben, let me do a little interject here. Turn up your treble a little bit on your mixer, on your channel. Okay. Turn up your treble about 25% and turn up your volume about 5%. This is a Teaching Liberty Hospital, and I will do that live on the air with no apologies. Let's talk a little
bit. How's this sound? Is that any better?
That sounds a lot better. Thank you.
Now I have my warm, fuzzy sound again.
You could turn up your volume even about 10% more. Okay. Yep. And, you know, that the article that we – or the letter that we didn't read the entirety of on specificity in our terminology and our nomenclature, I think I'm going to put that whole thing on the web post today for this episode so people can read the whole thing because it is a – the guy took a lot of time with it and makes some good points. And we kind of laughed at it and laughed with it and said, yeah, well, this is – don't – you know, you guys are the professors of this show, but I'm kind of the Beavis and Butthead of Liberty or one of them. So – you know, I get kind of tired of really complicated, long discussions of the nuances and the dot over the I in Liberty and how many non-aggression principalists can dance on the head of a pin and things like that. And I just like to go, which we kind of did a little bit with that letter. And I don't want to diminish it by not letting people read the guy's actual words. So I am going to publish it in the show notes today.
Hey, Michael, can I say one other thing about the English language?
No. Yeah, go ahead.
My son-in-law, who's now passed, he liked to say this following phrase. He said English doesn't necessarily borrow from other languages. Like it's often said English borrows from other languages.
It mugs English, them.
Yeah, English sneaks up behind other languages, bashes them in the head, and ruffles through their pocket.
Yeah. So, Bill, tell me more about question obedience and authority. Why people should question obedience and authority and not just question authority. I would say really quickly, questioning authority in the 60s. Now, Timothy Leary was pretty much close to a no government man, but a lot of his followers thought you had to work within the system to make change. And you know what? Question authority, that bumper sticker and T-shirt in the 60s has led to. It's led to Obama.
It has. It's because hippies, despite their protestations against the state, allegedly are the biggest collectivist boosters in recent memory. I mean, yeah. And these are the older hippies, not the hippies like the three of us, who are anarcho hippies.
Who carry guns.
As was coined by Jeff Berwick when he talked about his first pork fest.
We carry guns and don't vote.
Exactly. Here's the basic distillate is that to question authority, you don't have to get off your couch. To question obedience, you must put yourself in danger of having yourself
murdered,
kidnapped, fined, caged, maimed, or killed, depending on your level of resistance.
Yeah.
In the name of establishing your individuality to the extent that you withdraw your consent and you advance your refusal.
Ben,
well said. Well said.
I get all my good linguistic licks from Ben Stone.
I don't believe that. you were this way long ago.
But I just think that people, if you know what, just look, think of what the world would look like. What Michael's trying to do here is philosophically terraform the planet along with the podcast that Ben does. Think of what would happen if people said, you know what, not only will I question authority, but I'm going to question my own obedience. And not only will I question my obedience, but I'm going to take a stand and I am no longer going to comply and I'm going to refuse and I'm going to take the highest article of faith and individuality of all, which is opting out. And I'm going to select that and stand by it.
Yep. I have some really fun homework for anybody who is a fiends completist. If you want to know how long I have felt the ways that I do about these things, I'm 50. I was born in 1964. I'm going to read really quickly part of a report card from 1976 when I was 12. And if you want to read, I have a bunch of these scanned. If you go to the Freedom Fiend site and click on the link at the top that says bios, in my bio, it says, Michael was asked to leave public school due to his very vocal dislike for authority figures. Examples here, 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 and here. And there are five links with scans. Let me read this one from 1974. Michael appears to have many problems working in a classroom situation. He's an extremely intelligent boy, but is so undisciplined. And the reason I'm having trouble reading this is it's in the handwriting of a public school teacher, which is just
government
one.
School.
What did I say?
Government school teacher.
Yeah, public government
school teacher. Don't use colloquialisms.
All right. Well, there's also some here from the private school I was shipped off to after I was kicked out of public school. And they were even more adamant about my disregard for authority. Michael's an extremely intelligent boy, but he's so undisciplined that he is accomplishing nothing. I am concerned about his poor attitude toward doing homework, etc., and his disrespect for fellow students, which was basically me standing up to bullies. I was not disrespectful to fellow students, only when they did what collectivists often do, which is basically sneak up, poke you when the authority figure's not around, but when the authority figure's about to be around, and then get you in trouble for reacting when the authority figure sees you do it. Let me read another one really quick right here. In the course of the past year, I recommend to both Mr. and Mrs. Dean that their son Michael would probably benefit academically and socially from placement in a private school. Blah, blah, blah. That goes on to, we can't teach this kid. All right, here is, now that I'm at the private school, the Church Farm School in Paoli, Pennsylvania, which is now called the School at Church Farm because they wanted to downplay the church aspect of it. Mike, I didn't like being called Mike, but they called me Mike anyway. Mike could be number one in his class if he chose to do so. With little, and this is at a private school where the kids were smarter too. With little effort, he does well. However, if he would actively participate in class, he would do even better. All right, mathematics. Mike does well enough to get by fairly nicely. However, he still behaves in class as if he were an eighth grader. This is ninth grade. Hopefully, he will mature soon. Science, Mr. Brown. Michael prefers speed to accuracy. Foreign language. Mike has not made a good start. He seems to rather to create a disturbance in class than contribute to it. This goes
on.
That's
what we do. That's what we do. We create a disturbance.
That's what we do. If they don't want disturbances, they should stop disturbing us, as Mama Liberty said.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is the Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and Bill Buppert from ZeroGov.com and Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker from BadQuaker.com. And you know, every once in a while, something we do gets reblogged somewhere and a lot of people come listen to it from around the world. A lot of people listen to our show on radio and on the internet, but occasionally we'll get an influx of people who've never heard the show checking it out. And the comments are always something to the effect of, I love your podcast, but why do you introduce it every episode, after every break? Why do you do that? And they don't understand that this is a radio show, and we do that for the radio audience because a lot of people listen to talk radio for 10, 20, 30 minutes at a time, and that's it. You know, they jump in the car, they go to Walmart, they go to the church picnic, they go to the VFW picnic, they go to the rifle range, they go see a friend, they go see a movie. And on the way, they listen on the radio, and we do it for them. And people say, well, why don't you edit it out? Because we're not doing it for you, the person who's just listening to it once on the internet. We're doing it for the regular audience on the radio, and I like the podcast to be an accurate portrayal of what went out on radio for the ages, because a lot of people in Europe and elsewhere don't understand American talk radio. They don't understand. They know who Rush Limbaugh is and they hate him, but they don't, and they've heard a clip of him somewhere, but they don't really understand the format of talk radio. And we are on talk radio. It's pretty bizarre that we're on talk radio. There are only two shows in the world that are syndicated that are no government men, you know, small government to the point of, we want the government to slit its wrist in the bathtub because nobody loves it. And that's what we're going for. We're not talking about a violent revolution. We're talking about ignoring the state and withdrawing consent and encouraging others to do the same until the whole corrupt, violent, immoral, thieving cesspool just can't support itself and collapses under its own immense weight.
Stop voting, secede from the state. Withdraw your consent and advance your refusal.
Yep. And a really quick thing I want to mention here is the new website I set up. We've been talking about the Libertarians Against Humanity solitaire generator at freedomfiends.com/LOL. Well, there's a new one that's Freedom Fiends specific, and it's a lot of fun. I'll link it in the show notes today. It's Fiends Against Humanity solitaire generator. It's freedomfiends.com/FAH for Fiends Against Humanity. So, guys, give me the quick redemption in the third act here on the topic of question obedience as well as authority.
And I want Ben to chime in on this, is that what I just said is that the best way for us to get through this and to make it right is to advance ourselves.
Somebody's cell phone is going off.
That's just terrible radio.
And we were just talking during the break about how come you're not allowed to shoot people in the movie theater when your cell phone goes off, like that little cartoon they have with someone faking John Wayne's voice, basically saying, well, partner, if your cell phone goes off, I'm going to have to shoot you. And for some reason, I'm doing that in a Ronald Reagan voice, not a
Thing everybody's going to take away from this redemption of the third act is you remonstrating your co-hosts on their bad radio behavior.
But, you know, this is a teaching hospital. This is a teaching hospital. We don't hide our mistakes. We point them out. Was it you, Ben?
No, was it?
No, it was me.
Oh, okay.
All right. Yeah.
Well,
there it is.
There it is. Okay, Ben, what do you got on this whole topic of ignoring and questioning authority and obedience?
Bill and I often, when we're talking, we end up talking about either the First or the Second World War and the tragedy of them. And really, for the 20th century, the mood and pretty much everything that happened of any significance in the 20th century happened because of those two. Actually, it was one long, unending war that just had a pause in the middle.
Amen.
But, you know, none of the slaughter could have happened. None of the slaughter that Joseph Stalin brought on his own people, that Mao Zedong brought on his own people, none of that slaughter could have happened if people had just chosen not to obey. And that's really what it boils down to, of whether or not you're free or not, is whether or not you choose to obey. And as long as you choose to obey, you're not free. You can't be free.
Excellent. It's been a great show, guys. This has been the Freedom Fiends for October 19th, 2014. And I'm Michael Dean. You can find this show by going to freedomfiends.com. That's freedom, foxtrot, echo, November, Sierra.com. You can find Bill Buppert at zerogov.com. And you can find Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, at badquaker.com. Thank you for your service, fellas. It's been wonderful. Worms.
Worms.
Annelids.
Annelids is one of the answers in Fiends Against Humanity, Bill.
Excellent.
Worms.